began to play the blues in Seattle, Washington in 2006. Could you elaborate in more detail what actually inspired you to play the blues at that time? There had to be something that turned the switch on for you.
Sure. Well, there's two short answers, ZZ Top and Freddie King. I had been in a bunch of rock bands, you know, most of my life. And then, about 2006, my last rock project kind of fell apart. And I thought I wanted to do something a little bit different. And I wanted to do something that was comfortable and fun. And, you know, I think you start going down, you know, your career paths, and sometimes you can waver away from, you know, what's really fun and rewarding to do, you know. And so I just said, you know, I think I just want to put together a little ZZ Top side project and just play it, you know, a couple of times a month for a few months just for the heck of it. Mm-hmm. And so I got some guys together and we learned a bunch of ZZ Top songs. And you know, this is sort of the early years of YouTube, and you could search around, you know, how did this song end? Because it faded out on the record, and you could see how they play it live, and, you know, if there are three guitar parts and only one guitar player, like ZZ Top, what, you know, what did they do? And as I was surfing around, I saw this Freddie King video, and it was an instrumental tune. It's from some live DVD in Europe in the mid 70s, 74, 75, somewhere in there. And he mm-hmm. just blew me away. I don't know. I was just completely captured by his charisma and his command of the band and the way that he interpreted, you know, these songs like Ain't No Sunshine, you know, the way that he did it. I just thought it was fantastic. So we started doing some of that stuff too. And as I started poking around a little bit more, I discovered some people that really blew me away, like, you know, Albert King and Johnny Winter and Clarence Gatemouth Brown, and you know, people that I didn't really know that much about when I was a kid, because I grew up on classic rock and British Invasion and Southern rock, which was mm-hmm. for the most part based on a lot of these old blues guys. And when I grew up, you know, that was all there was to me. I didn't know the history behind it. But once I kind of got into the Freddie King thing, then I thought, wow, you know, I can't do it like he did, but I can do something in that vein. And I think that would be...
Excellent. Yeah, I get that vibe from you when you do your songs. And like I say, when I spin your tunes, I get the people really listening on, and the listeners start climbing up on my charts there. Okay, the next question I have for you. During my DJ shows, to start your second half, I always spin your tune, Sally Can't Dance, and it always gets up the listeners up and shaking their booties. What song on the deep, deep blue do you really enjoy performing live at your gigs? What song resonates with you deeply when you perform it or not?
Well, I mean, a lot of them resonate with me. You know, Deep, Deep Blue, I think that particular tune, it's, you know, it's slow and it's pretty long, and it's, you know, it takes a lot out of me to sing that and make it happen. And sometimes, you know, in that song, I kind of forget where I am, you know, close my eyes. I kind of drift away sometimes. I'm really proud of that song. I think it's got some, you know, it's got the slow, minor blues kind of element with a little bit of jazz in there, and then kind of a bridge that you might not hear in blues tunes or something. So I'm proud of that one, because I think, you know, it's an evolution of the blues. You know, Bo Diddley famously said, you know, don't imitate, innovate. And I think, you know, that's a good example of me, you know, coming up with something new. But you mentioned right. Sally Can't Dance, and you know, Lou Reed was a huge influence to me growing up. You know, of course, I listened to a lot of the guitar players, but the songwriters that I really admired of the songwriters I admired, Lou Reed was one of them. And it was an early, like, greatest hits record, sort of early in his solo career that he put out, called The Best of Lou Reed, Walking the Wild Side. And that whole album was just fantastic. It had sort of a smattering of This and That on it, and Sally Can't Dance. I mean, just to play that, play a song that I fell in love with when I was 12 years old. Now, that's always a blast. And then Meet Me in the Morning, the Bob Dylan tune off of Blood on the Tracks that we do. That's always a lot of fun. And, you know, there's kind of a story there, and we do it with some contour in that song. And I think that one goes over pretty well, and it's always a blast to play.
Right. Okay, great. Let me see. What do you wish to bring to the blues genre that is different from your peers and colleagues that will make you outstand and shine?
I think your question is maybe what do I think that, you know, I'm bringing to the picture that's unique?
Yeah.
I'm going to say it's a couple of things. I'm going to say it's my songwriting and my guitar playing. I think songwriting wise, for me, I can't just do a regular 1-4-5. I'm almost completely incapable of doing something like that. On the first album I did, you know, Happy After I Loved a Woman, I did it as a minor blues. I think that's about the only time I've really just done kind of a standard blues thing. I mean, I want to hear interesting stuff going on inside these songs. You know, my songs a lot of times will have bridges and breakdowns, quiet verses, extended solos, and things I call epilogues, things that happen at the end of the tune that kind of keep going. And each part for me kind of has its own flavor and vibe and mood. And I don't know, I'm hoping that people, identify me with this kind of stuff, the song structure. And it's really perhaps bringing in a little bit of, you know, the rock and pop song structure to the blues.
Right.
Not to say that I, you know, can't do some North Mississippi style thing that's more rhythm and thing, but I'm writing for the fourth album right now. There's a few, that I would consider to be kind of like that, except they just have the other changes in there. And, that's just kind of the way I write songs. They just sort of come out that way. So hopefully that's what I'm bringing to the picture. And as far as guitar playing, you know, I when I was younger, I copied people. You know, one of the first I ever learned was the solo to Freebird and how to play Stairway to Heaven. And, you know, I would ape there some Jeff Beck licks or, you know, play some of his tunes, kind of figure them out note for note. But after that, I really just stopped doing that. And I just developed my own way of playing riffs and runs, and I think that the way I put things together sound different than a lot of people. You know, I don't play the, you know, standard handful of Texas licks, or, you know, I don't do fusion-y stuff. I don't do a lot of what I call Emily's and Ernie's. You know, Ernie, 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 Emily, 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 Emily. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I try to stay away from that. And when I was in the seventh grade, my teacher criticized my writing style as being circumlocutionary. So of course I went home and asked my parents what the hell that meant. And, essentially it was beating around the bush. So where a lot of people might go, well, this is where the phrase needs to end. It needs to end right here and needs to end on this note. Well, I've already thought about that, and I can't just do it that way. I'm going to end it in a different place on a different note because I think that's cool, and I think that adds flavor, and I think that that's different. So if you listen to my solos, you know, hopefully you'll get a little bit of that in there. And I just practiced, you know, so hard for so long, so many years. I've been playing guitar for almost 35 years. And I've just kind of come up with my own vocabulary. And, you know, I think that that's a little bit different. And hopefully I'm, you know, bringing something to the party there.
Well, yes, you are. Definitely you are. I can see that in my shows when I'm spinning your songs. Okay, if given a choice, where would you love to perform at and why? Example, a stage, a country, a state, or a city?
Oh, where would I like to perform? Jeez. You know, I have had some fantastic experiences playing outdoors. I remember in 1998, we played some place in Vermont that was like a ski area or something, and the stage faced the mountain. And we were getting a lot of radio play at that time, and a song I wrote came up in the set list, and played it, and people were singing to it, and the sun was going down. We were kind of getting that purpley, you know, the red and purples of the sunset, and it was like one of life's perfect moments, you know. It was amazing. So I like all kinds of venues and stages and stuff, and every place has its own appeal. I mean, there's something fun about playing a small club with you know, an energetic crowd, and you're all on the same page, enjoying the moment, and, you know, they're singing along and hooting and hollering and stuff. Bigger stages are fun as well. You get, obviously, you're reaching more people, and in my case, giving more people a little taste of what I do. You know, that's the magic about playing some of these blues festivals, is you get good exposure there, and the people have paid to come to the festival, not necessarily to see you, but to see a bunch of new bands. And that can be a thrill as well, you know, as you play, as you're playing your set and you see, oh, well, these people are really starting to get it, dig it, you know, that's hugely rewarding. So I'm not sure if there's any one particular thing. Sure, I would love to play theaters. I would love to play, you know, Red Rocks or something. I would love to play the Gorge in George, Washington. But, you know, that's not as important as, you know, making my art and getting it out there and exposing my music to new people. That's you know, that is a great joy in my life. It's a source of great happiness.
Exactly. I find that very inspiring for myself, too, when I try to teach these people about certain artists and blues, and they go, wow, I never heard of this guy before. And the guy, one guy told me one time during my shows, hey, you know, every time I come to your DJ shows, I'm buying more iTunes, which is inspiring to me, because I'm exposing them to different artists like yourself. And they go, I never heard of this guy before. This is good stuff. So I could feel where you're coming from.
Thanks.
Okay, cool. Here's a good one. Yeah, here's a good one for you. And I know this is going to be a little bit tough one, but I want to gauge your internal feelings about this. In your most humble opinion, where do you foresee the blues genre heading towards the next century? Leaning more towards blues rock, or will there be another new offspring that integrates inspiring and innovative ideas and instruments?
I think there's certainly some trance blues stuff going on that's really interesting. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if you listen to popular music now, like, you know, like Mumford and Sons or, you know, Imagine Dragons, or, you know, there's been a great many influences that come in to form this sort of potpourri of a sound, you know, and not necessarily world music or something, but it's becoming more worldly. And perhaps the blues can become a little bit more worldly, and that will certainly be much to the chagrin of the blues police and people that really want to see traditional blues carry on. And I think there will always be a pocket of traditional blues carrying on, and plenty of people doing that and so forth. But, you know, one of my ideas my ideas for doing something fresh would be to treat this a little bit like a rock band I was in called Spec Cumming, and this was late 90s. I think they kind of called us nu metal or something. It was basically hard rock with a lot of drum loops in there and samples. And I think that could be pretty interesting. There are some bands that are doing stuff a little bit like that now, although they don't really get a lot of play because I'm not sure that, you know, there's been a breakout of that kind of blues. But, you know, there's guys like Slow Leak that do some interesting things. Of course, I'm on the spot now. I can't think of all these interesting bands, but there are some examples of the genre really kind of changing a little bit. You know, even B.B. King on one of his records, and he had guests on it, there was a track where he was like a rapper, Heavy D or something. Right. And so they kind of had, I mean, it wasn't like a typical rap beat, but it was like a drum machine or a sample beat and B.B. King playing over it. And it was really fresh and interesting, you know? Mm-hmm. Otis Taylor has been doing some pretty interesting. I think if you search for it, you can find some of these interesting ways of presenting blues. So, my guess would be more technology and more world influences with, you know, playing blues. But, you know, you got to keep that guitar in there. Got to keep that lead guitar alive.
Oh, yes, you definitely do. And I know that most of my listeners are coming down under in the Australian area. And also I got some coming from South Africa as well. So I can tell that it's spreading out worldwide. It's going to be interesting to see how those areas influence the blues, their type of sounds and vibes as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, now there. Here's another song. Here's another question I have for you. There are two songs from the CD titled Left 4 Dead that catches the listener's attention during my DJ shows. Okay, I'm curious, would you like to take a guess which ones they are?
Let's see, that your listeners really like off of Left 4 Dead.
Yeah, two songs I played they really like.
Oh, okay, I'm going to take a wild guess. They Ain't No Game and Long Way Down.